Burning Bridges with Margot.
Burned a lot of bridges.
Every Saturday, 2 to 4 p.m. on RadioFreeBrooklyn.com.
And to donate, go to RadioFreeBrooklyn.com/pledge. That's RadioFreeBrooklyn.com/pledge.
Listening to Burning Bridges with Margot, and I'm your fire starter, Margot Abedijan. And the guest today is running for senator. So depending on when you're listening to this, she's either running for senator, is a senator, or is doing some other amazing thing. And she's running for the Green Party. They actually asked her to run as senator. Her name is Miss, or Senator, maybe, Robin Wilson, and she is a ball of fire. She's absolutely amazing and inspiring, and talks about things that we don't usually talk about. What's really going on in this country? What's really going on in this world? And what should our focus be? You take care of the earth, it takes care of the people. And it was just very enlightening conversation with her. Oh, and depending on when you're listening to this, if it's after the election, maybe we're in complete Armageddon. I don't know. Hopefully not. So Miss Dragonfly is very interesting. I can't wait for this election to be over. It has been the longest election in the world. I was flying to Las Vegas, and my flight, first of all, was very delayed before we even left the airport, and then we had to circle around, and then we had to stay on the plane hours because Obama was campaigning in North Las Vegas for Hillary. Then when I was flying from Vegas to New York, they shut down LaGuardia Airport because Mike Pence's plane skidded off the runway. So then they said they're going to turn the plane back around, and then after they turned it around, they turned it back again, and then we had to go around. So I didn't think I could hate the election even more, but being stuck on planes 10 hours more than I needed to be really did not make me super happy. But anyway, there's hope. That's what this podcast is about. It's hope, and it's about what you can do. It's about what we all can do. And it really just starts with educating ourselves, even if we don't want to hear the truth. And then finding a way to participate and make a difference. And it could be small. It could be voting. It could be voting with your conscience for the Senate race. I'm not going to say that for the presidential race. But for the Senate race, I will go on record saying that. And without any further ado, Miss Robin Wilson, thank you. You're listening to Burning Bridges with Margot on RadioFreeBrooklyn.com. And if you want to find out about any stand-up shows I'm doing or other craziness, like my Facebook page, it's Margot Comedy, M-A-R-G-A-U-X, Comedy. Or follow me on Twitter, Margot with an X. Or on Instagram, Margot. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Burning Bridges with Margot on RadioFreeBrooklyn.com, and I'm your fire starter, Margot Avedisian. And today's very special guest is running for the New York State Senate for the Green Party. They actually asked her. We'll find out about that in a second. Welcome, Miss Robin Laverne Wilson.
Yay! Also known as Dragonfly.
Dragonfly.
They won't put that on the ballot.
I was
though.
Just going to ask you that. So I always start the show with, tell me about a bridge you thought you burned, you thought it was bad, and it actually turned out to be one of the best things that may have happened to you, or a good thing.
You know, there's so many ways to answer that, and I'm sitting here like, oh my gosh, which of the bridges do I go into? But I think I have one that actually ties into the fact that I'm running for senator. And one is the fact that there were about two or three false starts and fits in my journey to become a New Yorker. And several times that I thought I was finally leaving Texas, this is it. And And so the first time I thought that that was going to happen, my world just completely fell apart. And I mean everything from my car was totaled. I got fired from 2 jobs. My roommate skipped out on me, owing me rent money, my laptop crashed, my ferret died, like everything. It's like, okay, so obviously I'm not meant to leave Texas just yet. But the thing about it that was so amazing is being held back, and that interim introduced me to a whole aspect of San Antonio, Texas that I did not know existed, which was the art community, the art scene, which is what I was so looking for and longing for and part of why I wanted to be a New Yorker for so much of my life anyway. And this was in the mid to late 90s. So this was around the same time that poetry slams were taking off. And so, and that was also how Dragonfly, in a way, was born, from a pen name to the stage name, to helping to co-host poetry slams and other spoken word events, and basically being nurtured that much more as an artist in preparation for going to New York. Now, the second time I thought I was go, the ultimate bridge was burned, which was 9/11. And obviously, I was like, this is not a good time to go. And yet I also felt that I had this incredible, strange feeling of guilt. Because knowing how much I love New York for all of my life, like ever since I was old enough to understand and comprehend the concept of New York City, woo! Like, I wanted to be here. And so there was a part of me that actually felt like I let New York City down by not being able to physically be here to help. But, of course, I was part of all of the amazing solidarity that was happening around the country and around the world. And it was just further preparation and another way for me to fall deeper in love with the city and state that I now call home.
That's amazing. Yeah, for people who don't live in New York, I mean, it's hard to live here.
It is.
The most preparation you have, the better.
Yes. I tell baby New Yorkers all the time, well, the first year is going to be your hardest.
Yeah.
If you can get through that, you can definitely get through anything. Now, in the interest of full disclosure and being the Amma's amateur in the political arena, I will confess the first 6 years of the past 13 years that I've spent in the NYC metro area, technically was in Jersey City, but it's right across the Hudson.
It's really close.
Connected by the PATH train. And, you know, you talk to most New Yorkers, and they say they're willing to trade in Staten Island for, you know, downtown Jersey City,
oh, yeah,
and maybe even parts of Hoboken, so it's, you know, negotiable.
Yeah. It's really close. So how did you get this name Dragonfly?
Oh, geez. I can give you, there's a lot of ways to answer that. I'll give you the snarky answer I usually give, which is the dragonflies gave it to me. How else do you think I got the name? They picked me.
Well, so what does a dragonfly represent?
Dragonflies represent, usually the main word that people go to is transformation. Absolutely. In a metaphysical construct, and across all kinds of different spiritual paths. Dragonflies are actually prehistoric beings that are known to roam the earth with the dinosaurs. They were much larger then because of the air composition and the way all the beings were just like, just kind of gargantuan. And they were called griffinflies. So if I were to stand here in front of you with my arms out, which I do have quite a wingspan myself, I'd be a little bit bigger than what was called a griffin fly, which is the ancestor of the modern dragonfly, which are also cousins to the damselflies from the order Odonata, which means teeth-bearing, because they are ferocious in the air. Nom, 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 going after their prey with hundreds of eyes. And so it started with a poem that came to me and through me when I was 16 years old, my senior year of high school. I was always artistic, I was always creative, writer, poet, and this poem, Dragonfly Poet, came through me. And this poem, to paraphrase myself, is an analogy of how people uphold butterflies as probably maybe the most beautiful and the most feminine, the most admired of all the insects, but I'm not really a butterfly, I'm really a dragonfly. We're misunderstood and we're ferocious and fierce and try to catch us, you know? So,
yeah.
And then when I started doing the poetry scene, spoken word. I went from the page to the stage and introduced myself as Dragonfly. And it just honestly just kind of felt natural and right. And as I explained to people, no, my family did not give me that name, but they totally endorse it.
That's amazing. So you moved to New York and you start doing poetry and slam poetry. What's that like? Because that's in the early 2000s, right?
Well, yes. Well, technically, I, believe it or not, by the time I got to New York City, I think most of that was out of my system. But the same year that San Antonio formed its Poetry Slam team, which still exists today, in fact, and it's called Puro Slam, coincidentally, also went up against three different New York teams in the National Poetry Slam competition, and we won. And coincidentally, and I'm not even really a sports fan, it was the same year that the Spurs went up against New York and won. So there was this awesome parallel, like, we are the champions, you know? Like, yeah, brr, San Antonio, I, you know, we kill you in b-ball, we kill you in poetry. Anyway, and it was very liberating. But what I found I enjoyed most and what tended to be, I think, a bit more of my role in the local poetry slam back then was a sort of a curator. And I would encourage the incubation of poetry. That's also when I started working as a teaching artist and going into both schools and senior citizen centers and encouraging them to write. I was in my mid-20s at the time, so of course there was a lot of prolific internal exploration as well. A lot of the poetry that I wrote, I did end up kind of just keeping to myself as well. So poetry was a tool for me for self-growth in a lot of different ways. I think I keep that poetic nature of myself even in this campaign. Just to bring it back to the robinforsenator.com/donate is using language and dissecting and evaluating language as a way to infuse a different perspective in electoral politics and what we're doing. For instance, I love alliteration, but guess what? My platform or policy or philosophies or principles, hey, there's four P's right there. However you want to look at it. It's very simple. The Green Party has the four pillars. I have the four P's. Planet plus people plus peace equals prosperity.
That's the Green Party or that's your?
It's both. It's aligned with their pillars, but it's my way of presenting it. And that those are the priorities that we need to have. And they have to be in that specific order. Planet plus people plus peace equals prosperity. Many times, including with a lot of green campaigns, they put people first, but by putting people over the planet, I believe, is how we got into the immense predicament, multiple predicaments that we're in. And we'll use putting people first as justification for so much of the destruction that is happening to our planet. Earth is the greatest common denominator. And if it's not good for the planet, it's not good for the people. So that's why the planet has to come first, with the acknowledgement that the people are a part of the planet and is the one thing that we share in common and is the true source of our health and our wealth.
That's a really good way to put it, because if you think about what's going on with global warming and how it's affecting different parts of the world and famines and things like that, it's that then kind of flames, wars, and stuff that's going on in the Middle East.
Absolutely. It's all interconnected. And if we follow all of the dots, and when I say all of the dots, I mean across all of the issues. Like you right there just named about 2-3 different issues that seem disparate. But again, when you follow the money, somebody somewhere, and it's usually the same handful of people, they are profiting from our pain. And that's what it boils down to. And that's all the more reason why putting the planet first is, as I like to say, the chiropractic adjustment that our country and our policy absolutely needs. That is the benchmark. So I don't even use the term climate change and global warming anymore because I feel like it's beyond that. Mm-hmm. And when you start to factor in all the other ways that capitalism and the corporatocracy has literally corrupted and exploited our planet, it gets bigger than that. And the real term is ecocide. That's what we're facing. It's not just about the climate. It's also about all of the pollution and all the toxins that are literally poisoning us.
Yeah, like fracking.
Yes, absolutely. Like case in point in New York State. So Cuomo and I do my air quotes banned fracking, the act of fracking in New York State, but that's not a ban on the storage of the waste products that occurs in other adjacent states being stored in New York State. So really? Okay, so all the other frackers, all the other mother frackers, because that's what they are. They're fracking Mother Earth. All these other mother frackers can come and bring their crap and dump it here in New York State? Really?
That, for those who don't know what fracking is, it's...
It's rape of Mother Earth. Sorry. Did I say that too loudly?
It is. But technically, what they say they're doing is getting natural gas out of the earth, and they drill holes and they do high-pressured water mixed with a ton of chemicals, which then completely destroys the water supply around the surrounding areas, which we need to live.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an amazing documentary called Gasland.
Josh Fox.
Yeah. And yes. I saw that movie. I was at Sundance. I think it premiered maybe 4 or 5, maybe even 6 years ago. And I was with a friend who, I mean, he made a lot of money in tech, and they had a tax deal where if you gave money to fracking, then you didn't have to pay as much taxes.
Mm.
And so we, one of my friends is friends with Josh and was like, oh, you should go see this documentary. And my friend was like, ah, like, whatever. Okay, I guess we'll go. But, you know, it's not going to change my mind about anything. We watched this movie. I swear he, like, wiped a tear. Mm. And as soon as we got in the car on the way to the airport, he called his accountant and he said, get all my money out of fracking right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. See, so much richness in what you just shared. First of all, it goes to show how when we need culture to change culture, and that's one of the key things that I feel that I bring as a senatorial candidate, being asked by the Green Party, I do not consider myself a politician. I'm an artist. I'm an activist. I'm an aspiring educator. I'm working on my master's in applied theater at CUNY. So that's what I'm anchored in. If anything, I'm an aspiring stateswoman and an authentic, honest amateur standing up against this corporate capitalist corruption that is the pattern of the way that our country is run. So again, based on what you said, it goes to show how, yeah, we can C-SPAN all we want about fracking, but it takes music and art and film and podcasts and all these kinds of actual conversations to get people to really have empathy for each other and for the most amazing, biggest, blackest, most beautiful black life that matters, which is our planet. Our planet Earth is a form of life. And he was moved when he actually saw, and it was not no longer externalized, but in his face. It's also so important that we educate each other. Thank you for amplifying. I will admit, sometimes I take for granted that people actually know what fracking is, right? And in fact, my campaign manager, who's a big old geek, which is part of why he's a great campaign manager, explained to me that I think in the movie or show Battlestar Galactica, I'm sorry, geeks, I'm not as geekified, but that to have relations was called fracking. So he was like, what's wrong with fracking? I was like, yeah. And it sounds kind of cool word. You know, I could say mother fracker and the FCC won't ban me. But it is such a lie. And another big lie about fracking that they keep from us, well, two of them. One is that it's like the absolute bottom feeders. Okay. You know when you make a batch of cake or brownies, but you are taking the little spatula, the rubber spatula, and you're really trying to scrape that last little bit of batter up, right?
Yeah.
As if it's enough to make a whole brownie. It's really not. But you're just still just trying to scrape up the last little bit, okay? That's basically what they're doing now with the tar sands, with fracking. They are willing to literally wreak havoc on the planet and all of the surrounding people and resources to not only extract this little bit of the bottom feeder, dirtiest fossil fuel that's left because we've already hit peak oil, but none of that is meant for our consumption. None of it. Absolutely 0% of it. And the idea that they're feeding us that to continue to frack and to build these pipelines are going to give us security, energy security, is a huge, disgusting disgrace and lie to the American people, because all of it is meant to go offshore and be sold to these small handful of private interests. We will never see any of that energy, any of that money, but we are being told that this is the key to our security, really. And to bring it right back to what you were saying earlier is how all of these imperialistic wars for oil are not creating a safer, more secure future for any of us, anywhere. So that's why, again, planet plus people plus peace equals prosperity. I also say sunlight is our birthright. We have the biggest, most powerful, most beautiful, freest nuclear fusion power plant in the world, and it's called the sun. So why aren't we harnessing that?
Well, we're not, because only a few people are making money off oil and they don't want to let that go. But people think there aren't any options. I think, like, you know, a lot of people don't want to know the truth because then they feel like there's nothing they can do. So what's something people can do to feel empowered and kind of take control of the situation?
First of all, stop being afraid of the truth. And that goes for every single one of us, no matter where we fall on the spectrum. Everybody's paradigms are being shifted, and everything that we thought was this is now that, and vice versa. Don't be afraid to question everything and get the information for yourself. Number two, the grassroots. We have to come together regardless of what happens or who happens come November 9th. The day after Election Day. It really doesn't even matter whether it's Jill Stein for president, whether it's I refuse to put the other people's names in my mouth because, yeah. You know. So, but same thing with Senator of New York. The incumbent has been flying under the radar ever since 1999, okay? Because we're so distracted by the dog and pony show that is the presidential election. Yeah. But I'm a federal level candidate. And Mr. Schumer is potentially one of the most powerful. He is one of the most powerful men in government right now. And he's unchecked. All right. And so we have to remain vigilant watchdogs. We have to continue to organize, and we as the people have to have a better long game strategy, because the things that are happening now that are affecting us, these are things that have been on their long game plans for a few generations now, which is why when we hear things like someone pointed out that Mitt Romney said that the 1980s policy is back. Why are we back in the Cold War? Why? Think about that. Why are we still over in Asia? Iraq and Afghanistan are just the new Vietnam. Why are we on the verge of nuclear war? It's all almost the same policy again because of who it benefited the first, second, third time, etc. And while we remain distracted by these divisions of the isms, they're laughing at us and making money hand over fist. That's why I say, follow the money.
Yeah.
Connect the dots. See, okay, this is a good time for me to bust out with a song because, you know, I am an artist activist. Awesome. And I'm probably the only senatorial candidate that has their own theme song. But I think it tells the story of why I'm running and who we collectively are and what we need to do. I said, I'm running for our lives, yeah. Politicians keep on lying. People keep on dying. I'm so tired of crying. And so I'm running for our lives. But we're all running for our lives, yeah. When the grassroots get connected, our grievances collected, we've got the power to correct it, because we're running for our lives. We are all running for our lives right now. Yeah, thank you.
That's amazing.
Well, thank you. But that's dedicated to every single one of us who are not one of those one percenters who we're invisible to. We're completely invisible to. But guess what? There is a connection between Black Lives Matter and the environmentalist movement. There is a connection between Fight for 15 and immigration reform. There is a connection between, let's say, student loan debt and, I don't know, pick an issue. Pick them all.
Abortion.
There you go. Yeah, there's, you know, there's a way that we can connect all of those issues. Why? Because, okay, let's take those student loan debt, abortion, you know, women's rights.
Yeah, women's rights.
And how do those two come together? There's a young woman out there right now who may have to choose between being able to go to school or be a mother, or maybe she's already a mother and she's struggling to take care of her kids and get an education so that she can be a better provider for her children. Or maybe she's not single, but she's still with her partner struggling to make the ends meet, especially if she or her partner are shackled by student loan debt and so on and so forth, right? So it's very interesting how identity politics is usually considered this really just bad thing you just don't talk about whenever it's a person of color, whenever it's a woman, when they say things like the woman card, the race card, whatever. But I can tell you on many of Meet the Candidate panel that I've been on, and I can tell you on all of them, I've been the only woman, I've only been the only person of African ancestry. But yet almost every time, every candidate, even white male, gives it an introduction of who they are. I'm such and such, and I grew up in this town, and this is my faith, and this is my ancestry, and blah, blah, blah. Like, it matters. So why is it all of a sudden only an issue and associated with entitlement as a negative thing whenever it's someone from one of those identities? But the thing is that the personal is political. And the political is personal because it affects our day-to-day lives. So I also venture that we need a whole nother level of diversity in our elected politics. And I'm not saying the type of diversity that we usually think of where we think of gender and color and culture and creed and those things. But where are the artists? And I'm not just talking about the puppets like, you know, Ronald Reagan, who was an actor, talking head, blah, blah, blah. No, like, where are the real artists and the activists and the educators amongst our elected officials? Where are they? Where are the scientists and the engineers who really know how to fix things and ask the right questions and be analytical. You know, where are the philosophers? Where are the people who grow our food? The farmers, the organic farmers especially, not the industrialists. So we are under the thumb of an oligarchy and corporatocracy because that's who's running our government, dominated by business, industry, military, law, clergy. We don't have enough diversity from the other areas of society that contribute to make society. And as much sweat equity as the 99% working class have in literally keeping this country going, why aren't there more of us within our government? And so, again, honored that I was considered and that the Green Party called me based on the things that I have done as a vocal activist, a performance artist, rebel. I sing with Reverend Billy and the Church of Stop Shopping Gospel Choir, and I've been a member in that choir for 7, going on 8 years now, and learned a lot about how to combine art with activism. And there's room for each of us to do it in our own way. I also portray Helvetica Bolt. She is a comic book social justice activist turned super shero. And I am like her professional cosplayer ambassador to bring her to life and inspire each of us to claim our inner superpowers and be that everyday working class hero. And then finally, I'm also known as Miss Justice Jester, who is my own street activism, performance artist personae, usually in red, white, and blue with a big red afro and a tambourine, and bringing love and light and laughter and levity to whatever issue is bringing us out into the streets. So that's a variety of the different ways that I've used culture to try to implement change and instigate thinking outside the box.
Well, what about for the pessimists, the people who are like, it's just throwing your vote away, or nothing can come of it? I mean, if you look at Bernie Sanders, I mean, the deck was stacked against him, and they did everything they could to make sure he wasn't the elected official. And I think a lot of it was unfair and not legal or right, but a lot of people are like, well, I guess I have to pick from the lesser of two evils because, I believe this stuff, but it's never going to happen. Look what happened in that situation.
There's 4 candidates. You're really going to let them insult you into thinking that you can't count people's? Hello. I'm not with a third party. I'm with the Green Party, which is a party, period. These are the kinds of mind tricks that they do with language that I was talking about earlier. Yeah. You know, even the language that is used is, we have to break it down and dissect it. Okay, the word senator is old Latin for old man. Well, doesn't that explain a lot?
Yeah.
What a senator actually does? How about the fact that everyone is, first of all, so frustrated with the presidential election that they're not looking at the rest of the ballot? So disenfranchised that you're not going to vote for what's happening right here in your local community? Pay attention, because it's these elections, and the closer you get to the local level, those are the people who eventually escalate and become the future senators, the future governors, the future potential presidential candidates. So you have to start paying attention on the ground level right now. Okay. Another thing about me running is the fact that in the same way that we have been fighting for access to the polls to be able to vote and make a change, and we continue to consistently stand up and fight for that access and standing up against voter caging, which is, they use the term voter fraud, which is such a pile of hot you-know-what. They use the claim of voter fraud to cover up the abuses to our voting rights, such as voter caging, that's done. I'm not going to dissect it. That's simple enough for y'all to Google, all right? Google voter caging, all right? Seriously. Also, highly recommend Greg Palast. He has a book comic book and documentary all out called The Best Democracy That Money Can Buy. Rather than me try to give that lesson, I can tell you, he has done the heavy lifting that explains exactly how, who, and why elections are manipulated the way that they did. Part of the reason why we get so frustrated is because of the fact that we don't know exactly how they are manipulating us. We know it's being done, and it is an icky feeling, and it does make you want to just, you know, go home and try to shake off the feeling of being victimized, because that's really what it is. But yet the more that you know, the more ammunition that you, me, and we have to overcome that. And that's why I say it's not me, but we are running for senator. We are running for senator because we have to fight just as hard for access to the ballot as we are fighting for access to the polls. It's they're both equally important. Look around at your community. Look around at who are the grassroots leaders. Look around at the people who you actually trust, respect, admire, doing positive things for your community. And start nurturing them and asking them to be your elected officials. That's another way you take control of your community. Or be that leader and say, you know what? I'm going to take a stab at it. I'm going to take a shot at it. That's what happens when you have non-corporate political parties. We're not a third party. We're a non-corporate party, which is evident by the way that we have been shut out of the corporate debates, the corporate mainstream media. That's the distinction. I reject the term third because, once again, we're taking language and pulling it apart. Senator means old man. Ha! Explains a lot, right? Let's take the word third. Third has a very icky, pejorative feeling to it, right? Do you want to be a third wheel?
No.
No, right. Do you want to be treated like a third-class citizen from a third-world country and come in third place? No. So, if there's four candidates on the ballot, which one's going to be considered the third party? And do they really think we can't count? Now, the only time that I can think of the word third being used in a way that's really affirmative is when you say, you know, impartial third party opinion. And I'd like to think that that's what the Green Party is. We're impartial to corporate influence. And by the way, I find it very interesting and desperate how Trump supporters have been trying to say that because Jill Stein has directly attacked Hillary Clinton and many of her claims does not equate an endorsement for Donald Trump, in the same way that it's not true that voting your conscience and voting for a Green Party candidate like Jill Stein or myself equates a vote for somebody else. If I have a cookie and I give it to you, instead of this invisible person over here in the corner, right? How did that invisible person in the corner somehow end up with your cookie if I gave it to you? It's the same kind of logic. Otherwise, if we don't really fully stand up for and believe in the voting process and participate in it fully with full education awareness, it will never change.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with education. How are people supposed to get this education? Because the media is not talking about Green Party candidates. They weren't even talking about Bernie Sanders, you know? So it makes it really hard for people to even know what the other options are.
I'm going to be real here. No excuse. No excuse. Lazy excuse. Seriously. Everybody, y'all. Okay, first of all, you're listening to a podcast. It didn't come through MSNBC, CNN, or anything. You put in the energy and the effort to make sure that this particular digital file streamed through your digital device so that you could get this information, right? How many people, how many of you out there actually watch pornography? Oh my gosh, like, did it just jump out through your phone into your eyeballs? No, you went and you got it, right? It's the same thing. You decide. You have to decide. I'm going to be a citizen rather than a consumer. Boom. We've been indoctrinated to be consumers. Boom, right? To the point where it actually takes effort, unfortunately, to be an upstanding, responsible citizen and fully participate. Capitalism and democracy are not the same. I do remember that from fourth grade. But the thing is that they don't even teach civics completely anymore. It's hit or miss. Most of the people that I've spoken to said they, and I'm talking young people, have said that they didn't get that information. They don't remember it, especially if they went to your average public school right now. Think about the tragic disservice. And is that by design? Clearly, if people aren't asking enough questions and making the assumption, literally half of their choices, half of their information, half of their options, opportunity, all of that, just boom, gone. Just because the mainstream media does not give them all of their information. So in the same way, I looked at this running for senator as an opportunity for me as an artist, activist, performer. What does the performance of my most civic-minded self look like? And so there's parts of me that are completely empirical about this and parts of me that are completely kind of abstract and metaphysical. And I'd say that the abstract metaphysical part of this running for senator on the Green Party ticket is that I've been wearing nothing but the color green. Notice all my green I'm wearing. Yeah, I cleared out a few thrift stores.
Like, what does it entail running for senator?
What does it entail? What does it entail? It entails being willing to be a public citizen on a level that I wasn't really used to or expecting, but the accountability that comes from that, running on the Green Party entails that you actually are predominantly on your own and running your campaign the way that you want to. There's ideas, suggestions, there's playbooks, there's other people who have run campaigns before, but it's still predominantly up to you to determine what does your campaign mean and stand for. It means what just happened to me, which is the odometer on your car flipping 200,000 miles. And I had 4 separate car repairs on my last campaign trail journey from Brooklyn to Glens Falls in the Adirondacks. Big shout out to Matt Funicello, who's running for Congress up there. And coincidentally, 2 other Robins, Robin Barkenhagen and Robin Fox, running for office.
That's funny.
It is funny. And it's really also very funny that we also had like very completely different aesthetics. It was such an honor to stand alongside all my other fellow Green Party candidates because, again, I feel like we represented the true diversity of who and what New Yorkers are. From there's me, where I come in my all green and a touch of my Afrocentricity. And then there's Matt Funicello, who runs a bakery and a cafe and is really just your, like, regular, hardworking guy, entrepreneur. There's Robin Barkenhagen, he's got long hair, but he wears the suit and tie because he understands that there's still optics at play and looking like you are an actual political candidate. And then there was Robin Fox, who was just wearing, you know, a Save the Earth, you know, Grateful Dead looking t-shirt and jeans, man. Like, and he kind of represents, I think, what a lot of people associate with the Green Party. But yet, right there, you have this, like, this huge visual range of what a candidate of the people, by the people, and for the people can look like. And yet also at the same time, we were all aligned by the 4 pillars of the Green Party. We each expressed them our own way. We were all there to completely support each other's campaigns. And when my car, her name is Sugarfly, because she's a 1998 Nissan Maxima 5-speed, y'all. That's right. Yo, senatorial candidate drives a stick shift, baby. Badass. Anyway, so yeah, I had to leave her in the Adirondacks, but to go to Utica and Rochester. And fellow Greens, again, because we're regular people, we're not corporate sponsored, they shuttled me across the state and back. Huge, huge thanks to Christine Shaheen and Nancy, who drove me across, and to Alex White in Rochester, and also to SUNY Brockport And I went out there and inspired a lot of really super young people. And it's also this experience of trying to balance quality interactions versus quantity. Of course, when you're on a shoestring budget, social media is key. And so that's the best way to have quantity interactions, but it's not as personal as the quality interactions with people one-on-one, like in Utica, where I walked into a full house because of my car repairs. I got there an hour late, so as soon as I got there, I jumped up with my tambourine, started singing to them, inspiring, as well as having a very short impromptu interactive town hall where I let them tell me what is Utica and what does Utica need. And me trying to set the model for what a new kind of leader looks like, where we have interactive town halls, where people talk to instead of at each other, and we find solutions with each other and not for each other. And even being willing to call out the elephant in the room, which usually means me also saying, I am absolutely grateful to be here and for this turnout, but at the same time, I can't help but ask, why am I the only person of color in this room, in a room full of so many progressive people? And so that, I think, is, for me, and the skin and experience that I live in, that is what being a senatorial candidate looks like. And learning and listening and taking in the big picture of who and what New York is, not just New York City, and finding all those spaces of common ground and connecting all of our dots and calling out the polka dots that we may have in our peripheral vision as progressives, but still making that space for us to forgive and learn and nurture and move forward in greater coalition, because the stakes are too high for everybody.
Yeah. Were there a lot of undecided voters there, or were they Green Party people?
I would say that most of them definitely were dedicated Green Party people. And I also think that, again, because of the mass disenfranchisement that we're all experiencing with mainstream media and the silencing that comes from it, there was a senatorial debate on Sunday. I wasn't invited, neither was the Libertarian candidate, because they claimed we didn't poll high enough. But despite the fact that our names are absolutely on the ballot, our names were not included in the poll. So there you go. What do you expect?
That's insane. That's crazy. If you're on the ballot, you should be at the debate.
That's all the more reason why, again, we have to be the media. And we have to hold the media accountable. My background is also in media and journalism. And I also remember the media being referred to as the fourth estate. This is, again, back when civics was taught. And as the fourth estate, it is responsible for the checks and balances against the other three forms of government. And they're not doing that if they're in their pocket.
Yeah, no, I think the media is one of the main problems. I mean, there's no accountability. I don't understand how they can say things that aren't blatantly lies, and that's okay. Even with just, like, saying Obama wasn't born in the United States and making a big deal out of this, that's not true. Why are you allowed to say this and then convince people, because they see it on TV, that I just don't understand how they get away with saying blatant lies?
Deregulation, monopolization of the media. I started doing radio when I was 14 years old. And I remember when I was in high school, I wanted to have my own multimedia corporation. I was inspired by the people who were rising at the time, like Oprah Winfrey, Russell Simmons, Queen Latifah, and whatnot. But by the time that I got old enough to really professionally enter media, it was a done deal. Radio stations had been consolidated, and this concept of programming took place, whereas before DJs had the autonomy to give the news, to give local news, to break new artists, to break new songs, to break up the monotony. Instead, we're being drilled with the same 10 songs over and over. And I just keep thinking, that's why our movement lacks a soundtrack. And again, the powers that be, they get it. They understand that the 60s was so powerful because it had a soundtrack. It's so hard to go back and think about the most, one of the most revolutionary times in American culture and not just think of all of the music that surrounded it and spoke to all of those issues. Where do we have that now? And once again, it's the same thing. You have to go and search for it. When there's so many artists that are saying and doing incredible revolutionary things. Oh my gosh, there's Saul Williams, there's Climbing Poetry, there's the Peace Poets, there's Jasiri X, there's One Day There's Gonna Be Miss Justice Jester, and on and on and on. We're not hearing any of this. There's Dead Prez, there's Talib Kweli, there's on and on. We don't hear any of that on the radio. Notice what we hear on the radio is the lowest common denominator, because that feeds into a less discerning, less questioning population that's not going to ask the hard question and is going to accept the BS that's being force-fed down our throats. So again, in order to change the culture, we got to be that culture. We don't need your pipelines. No, 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 no. We don't need your pipelines. What do we need? All we need is the sunshine. Everything will turn out fine. We don't need your pipelines.
Amazing. Well, that issue is getting a little bit of attention, but it's just probably going to be hidden again. It's hard not to be kind of pessimistic. You know, it's like once you know the truth, it just seems like everything's stacked against you. And I'm an optimistic person, and, you know, I believe in all this stuff, and I talk about it as much as I can and do whatever I can. But I just know that there's this attitude with a lot of progressive people that, you know, sure, we know what's going on, but what can we really do about it?
I think that the best thing that we can do is continue to not just educate ourselves, but educate others so that we don't feel isolated in our frustration and disgust and outrage, because you're not isolated. That's what, again, I say it's not me, but we are running for senator, right? You want to stand up for or against something? I'd like to think that voting for me is a vote for what you believe in. Voting for Jill Stein is voting for what you believe in. And this is very important because there's so much to go against. We need to embrace the opportunities that we have to work for something. What are we working for? I want to work for clean energy. And in an anarchist way, the people have to just do it. We have to figure out how we can claim that power and just start putting those solar panels on all of our roofs and get off the grid. Instead of waiting for them to do the infrastructure for us. Guess what? We are the community. We are the infrastructure. All we have to do is stand up and do it. So we figure out how to do it. Decentralizing our power grid will do so much amazing work for our security, for our economy. How many millions of jobs, thousands to millions of jobs potentially, for us to just start putting the solar up there, out there. Just do it. Just start it. Start community utility solar cooperatives. Do it. Do it now, right? Like, tangibly put that angst into something productive. Sunlight is our birthright. Here's another thing that we can do. Run for office. Do it yourself. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Seriously. Like, be a part of the system that you intend to change. And I did a lot of heart consultation with myself, my family, my friends, and my ancestors. I look up to Harriet Tubman as she's the ultimate founding, let's just stop being so patriarchal, founding parent of this country. She, to me, is the epitome of what life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness looks like. She is the epitome of the holy trinity of democracy, which is freedom, equality, and justice, and the work that she did to try to achieve that has inspired many a generation after her, including me. So we have to be as radical as Harriet in our own way and not ask for permission to change the status quo in a way that is positive and nonviolent. Either we're disrupting the status quo or we are status quo. And finally, I think one of the main things that we need to do is, again, the anger that you have, that we have, it's righteous. It's righteous. It means you're paying attention. It means you give a damn. It probably means you have a soul. It means that you know that things have to change and you want to use your power for good and not evil. So figure it out. We all have to find our own particular strategy and tactic that works the best for you and be willing to go as far down the fringe of nonviolent resistance as possible. That's my boundary. It has to be nonviolent. That is the umbrella upon which my strategy and tactics fall. Hence, I practice vehement benevolence. Vehement benevolence. Yes, I am mad as hell, but guess what? It's anchored in love, including love for the oppressors. Case in point, Uncle Chuck. Chuck Schumer. Yes, I finally said his name. He lives within the impact zone of both Indian Point nuclear power plant, which is crumbling, dilapidated, failing, leaking radioactivity, and needs to close, like, yesterday. And within feet, within 105 feet of that, is where they are putting the finishing touches of the Spectra AIM pipeline. So the Dakota Access Pipeline is just one of many, and we have our own homegrown struggle right here. And as much as Chuck Schumer loves him some press conferences and loves him some being in front of camera, said nothing to halt the construction of this pipeline. He missed the deadline to speak to FERC. He let millions of New Yorkers down. 20 million New Yorkers live within the 50-mile impact zone of not if but when either of those two, the pipeline or the nuclear power plant, happens to destruct and interact with each other. Now, keep in mind that the company Spectra does not have a glowing safety record. In just April, they had a major pipeline incident in Pennsylvania. And do you know how many hundreds of thousands of fossil fuel contaminated the area, contaminates the drinking water? And we're doing that right here in Peekskill, New York. And like I said, he's within the impact zone. Even his life is endangered by his own greed and commitment to his cronies and the dollar, right? Mm-hmm. So when I say that I'm running for our lives, it includes all of them. It includes the oppressors' lives, it includes the non-human lives, includes this entire planet as the ultimate form of life on Earth as we know it.
I had this realization when you were talking, because I'm like, what can we do? And just wrapping my head around it. And I have been in Bitcoin, the digital currency, since 2012, and that is a decentralized form of currency.
Wow.
And that was all these people who just decided to download this program And now there's hardware involved. But originally, it was just you just had to download this software, and then you could participate in the system. And now it's all over the world, and there's no way to shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
And it grew into this massive thing that now even the media is talking about. When I was involved, no one knew anything really about it except these, you know, small groups of nerdy people. And now it's a mainstream concept.
Right.
So it can happen. It just, there has to be, you know, this movement of the solar panels you're talking about. Like, it can happen.
Absolutely. But we there's 99 of us for every one of them. All right. Imagine if even only half of the 99%. Okay, so let's just say, let's just round it off, 98. Okay, what's half of 98? 46, right? Am I right? Is that right? Yeah, that sounds about right. No, 48.
48?
There you go. Okay, 48. 48 out of 100 people. It only takes 10% of, it only takes 10% of a population, really, to have a massive influence on society and culture, how trends happen, right? So imagine if only half of the 98 to 99% wake up and break down their silos and start connecting their dots and realizing how all of our issues are connected. Like even that pipeline song that I sang, it's not just speaking about fossil fuel pipelines. It's also the school to prison pipeline. All we need is the sunshine. We need solar panels. All we need is the sunshine. We need a better way of teaching our children that provokes their joy for life and less funneling really excited young people who have a lot of kinetic energy that can be funneled into innovation and learning, and instead doing what we did to the Khalif Browders of the world, may that young man rest in power, and being warehoused for no reason in solitary confinement for 2 years, denied access to sunlight. So that sunlight, in so many ways, represents that freedom. To me, Bitcoin is like sunlight. And it just goes to prove that this thing that we are killing and dying over, money, is completely made up. It's completely made up when all of the resources that we actually really need to be a happy, healthy society is already there and actually already free. And we're already overproducing and overconsuming as it is. So we have to slow down and be more of a citizen of the earth and less of a consumer.
Yeah, when you look at where our food even comes from, it grosses me out. I mean, I'm a pescatarian, but even my vegetables and things like that, it's what we're doing to our food. We're turning it not into food anymore.
That's why I say, instead of just talking about global warming, it's ecocide, because it's all interconnected in the way that we have manipulated our environment to the point that it is toxic and foreign and alienating to us, to the point that we may not be able to continue to sustain life, or the life that will be sustained won't include our species. So, yeah, I agree. And part of it is, and part of that security is that we invest in sustainable, local, wholesome, nutritious food sources. Why isn't learning how to grow our own food part of our curriculum? I mean, let's just, again, let's reel it back. Let's not think so much as industrialists, because we're not even in the industrial era anymore at this point, but we're still educating as if we were. And in a lot of ways, we have to go even back before what that was and get back to the basics of what does it take to just survive? We need to learn how to grow our own food again. We need to learn basic DIY skills. We need to learn how to be friends with and partners with the land and respect it and nurture it rather than see it as something to conquer and exploit and conquest. That's why I have a matriotic versus a patriotic worldview that sees the entire planet and all of its beings as precious life to be protected.
Well, and I think even going further from the earth or back in, rather, it's with women in this society, too. It's like coming back home or bringing the woman back as an equal opposed to oppressed. So it's like the earth and women as a gender.
Oh, absolutely. And that just, I believe in the equalization of all rights across gender expression, and sexual orientation. Because we've now evolved to the point of understanding that those three are actually independent and separate and unfortunately have become their own unique basis for discrimination. And again, part of, I think, us changing the culture, again, is upholding that language to understand, oh, my gender and my gender expression are not necessarily the same. And also that part of what makes society and culture so enriched and so exciting is the diversity of people and the different worldviews and cultures that we bring to it and negotiating those spaces. Another big part of why I always wanted to be a New Yorker, just being here after 13 years, is a lifelong dream. And in the same way that I admire Harriet Tubman and the Underground Railroad, New York City and state, respectively, have always represented freedom for me as a woman of African ancestry, descended from enslaved Africans, and how the Underground Railroad terminal was New York State up until the Fugitive Slave Act, and then we had to cross into Canada. But nonetheless, New York State represented freedom, the Statue of Liberty, and all of that. Even though I'm not from immigrant stock, I still embrace what the Statue of Liberty represents. And yet, here we are as a country punishing and trying to keep out the people who want to immigrate because their environment, their country, their community, their home has been completely disrupted by climate change and American capitalist imperialism and or combination thereof.
Yeah, and actually immigrants in this country, they way help the economy, that's proven. So there's no basis, and they actually, I think, don't commit as many crimes. So all the basis of why these people shouldn't be here doesn't make any sense. But they like to put these false accusations out there as if they're truth, and then the media reports on them like they're truth, and then people interpret them like they're truth, and then everyone has this misguided notion about things, even though our country is founded on immigrants.
Well, this country is founded
on freedom.
Well, I'd like to remind people that the foundation of this country is actually an uncomfortable trifecta of the displaced, the enslaved, and immigrants. And when we invisibilize the other two major factions that have been exploited to create the system that we're all living in now, then we're doing an incredible disservice to understanding where we are and how to move forward. America's society, especially with the way that these news cycles are created, cuts the heads and tails off of history so much that people don't have enough context, which is also why I believe and have on my platform, as does Jill Stein, whose platform I amplify as a federal level candidate, also on the Green Party ticket. Very important. This country needs a truth and reconciliation movement. We urgently need to use culture in addition to policy. You can change policies all you want. That doesn't change culture. Not unless we have a real empathy for each other and find ways to nurture a real dialogue where we, again, can talk to instead of at each other and start to explore those blind spots that we have in our worldview towards each other. And we need to understand the historic context of how colonization, imperialism, genocide, and enslavement have all contributed to all of the detrimental systematic factors that run our society and make it inequitable for a large part of the population.
I think that's a brilliant point because I'm all about showing other perspectives. And I'm Armenian, and we had a genocide, and people don't recognize it. And I saw how that kind of affected my family and just having that kind of recognition of it. And so I can't even imagine, being African-American or Native American in this country and to just have it all glossed over and like, oh, okay, everything's fine. Because I'm sure that, well, I know that pain is still there and there wasn't really any sort of fix or acknowledgement of it.
And let's also, again, because language matters, I prefer to not refer to myself as African American. And again, because when you look at what does that imply? Well, I can't point to exactly where in Africa my ancestors came from. But my friends who are from Ghana, who are from Nigeria, who are first generation or immigrants, they're truly African American. Now, again, I'm acknowledging African ancestry, but my partner is Caribbean American. So then where would he fall under African American? And again, this is part of how language can create these barriers and silos without us even realizing it. The same way like I said earlier about third party, now our minds are already set up for limitation when we're already past that limitation. Again, when you were talking about how does the media continue to lie, they continue to lie and gaslight us by using these language tricks. And this goes all the way back to understanding the difference between news and journalism versus PR and propaganda. And it is very difficult these days to tell the difference between the two. And because of my background in media, having a deeper understanding of how these two work and interplay, and the lines are getting more and more fuzzy. Okay, if you don't know already, Fox News is owned by Rupert Murdoch, who is a huge conservative right-wing billionaire. So what's his vested interest in making sure that we don't get all the information that we need? Again, why we need to be the media. Again, why we need to maintain a free, neutral, democratic internet as a public utility and not as a commodity that corporations can continue to be the gatekeeper of and trying to once again monopolize with this AT&T and Time Warner cable merger. It's like every time you turn around, there's another way that they're encroaching upon us.
So back to the language, what do we say that if we shouldn't be saying African American or Native American, if that's putting people in categories that's not even actually accurate?
Oh, yeah. Even then, and I don't say that in a way that I'm being, like, reflexive or like, oh, my God, you're not PC. What did you just say? No, it's not like that. Because if that, it varies from person to person. In fact, in my grad school class, amongst my cohorts, there are four of us who are of African ancestry. But even amongst the four of us, we have a different take amongst our preferences. Some of us like people of color. Some of us don't. Some of us prefer African American. Some of us prefer Black. Some prefer. So, again, honestly, our non-Black cohorts were like, I don't know what to say. You know, but at the same time, if we don't have this dialogue together, how do we come to an understanding of why, right? And I think that after explaining to you what my preference is and how having this specific language makes us realize how we've created silos that shouldn't be there. But I was raised Pan-African, which is that all of us who are of African ancestry are united and connected by our history and our struggles. And even now, there's this elusive essence of being African that you can't really name what it is, but it is that thing that connects us. For instance, when I went to Kenya 10 years ago, now most likely my ancestry is not from that part of the continent. It was West Africa where we were taken and forced across the Atlantic Ocean. However, I was still on the mother continent for the first time. But I could also see a huge distinction that comes from not having been actually displaced from your indigenous land. Hence why I like to use the term indigenous American versus Native American. I'm a native to America at this point, but I know my ancestors don't have the generations. And we have, well, let me rephrase that. My ancestors do have generations of sweat equity in this land, but I also understand who has the most number of generations actually buried on this specific landmass, right? So that everybody is essentially indigenous to somewhere. And I'm acknowledging who's indigenous to this landmass that we stand on, which is also why we need to think about why is it that those of us who are within this very specific nation state that we call the United States of America, but yet we want to, quote, build a wall to keep out the people who are also truly Americans in the sense that how many generations do they have ancestors buried on this landmass, right? And so understanding that, again, thinking not just in my immediate political, social political context of right here, right now, but thinking across space and time and thinking about seven generations forward and backwards, right? Like, oh, even though Kenya was colonized, they were not taken from their land. And I think that has an incredibly different effect on the psyche and remain the majority population on their land versus you come over here and the people who are indigenous to this land have been systematically murdered, literally decimated, and forced into some of the most barren corners of this landmass. What effect does that have on the psyche? And so, again, language, history, all of those are incredibly important to the political process. So the way for us to deal with our frustration with why things are the way that they are now is don't be afraid to dissect and do the research and figure out why things are the way that they are, as well as do not be afraid of whatever negative feelings of anger or guilt or shame come up, because those are legitimate responses to things that went bad, to things that are completely screwed up. To human beings. But what are we going to do with that anger? What are we going to do with that guilt? What are we going to do with that shame? And there's not one answer. But right now, we're in the middle of an election season. My campaign is one to inspire hope and inspiration and thinking outside of the box and for us to step up and perform our most civic-minded selves on whatever side of the ballot that we are, that we will continue to carry each other going forward November 9th, and especially by continuing to educate ourselves and each other, the history, the language, the context of everything, the empathy to know another person's experience, so that we can truly unite as the 98% and 99% and break down the silos and effectively organize. I said, we're running for our lives, yeah. When the grassroots get connected, our grievances collected, we've got the power to correct it, because we're running for our lives.
So if people want to find out more information about you and topics you believe in, how would they do that?
I'm figuring that out now. No, just kidding. Campaign website is Robin for Senator, RobinForSenator.com. Also, Dragonfly for Senator. Hey, I mean, they wouldn't put Dragonfly on the ballot, but I did get the website. But you know what? Come November 9th, it's also an expiration for me on what does this journey as a now stepping into the public spotlight citizen look like, and how to continue to have impact upon positive change in our communities. What does that look like? What does that mean? I've got a lot of ideas. I'm still figuring it out. But that's the question that I pose to all of us. Do not put all of your hopes and dreams on any one individual. Collectively, we need each other moving forward.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Totally voting for you.
Thank you.
So for people who are listening, you either still have the opportunity to vote for her, or if you're
Robin Laverne Wilson, Green Party candidate for U.S. Senator of New York State.
And for those on iTunes, after the election, either Ms. Wilson is a senator, or you could still check out
yes.
her site.
You'll still be able to go to those sites when I figure out what's... Well, I'll tell you what's next is catching up on a whole lot of overdue homework as a result of campaigning.
You're like, oh, here's my excuse. Sorry, Professor.
I'm totally
running for federal government.
That is the only time I have used the I'm running for senator card. The bursar's office. Yeah, no, I owe you some money, but I'm kind of running for senator right now, and it doesn't pay any bills, so you might want to make me an exception. And they did. Thank you, CUNY.
That is amazing. Awesome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I really hope that I inspire some people. And you know what?
You inspired me, so.
Awesome. Well, you know what? And also, y'all can tweet at me, Facebook, Instagram. Everything is branded Robin for Senator, R-O-B-I-N. F-O-R-S-E-N-A-T-O-R.
Good thing you're the only one of the Robins running for senator.
Thank goodness, yes. And either way, whether I'm a Robin or a dragonfly, I got wings and I'm gonna fly.
That's true. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Burning Bridges with Margo on RadioFreeBrooklyn.com. And if you want to find out about any stand-up shows I'm doing or other craziness, like my Facebook page, it's Margo Comedy, M-A-R-G-A-U-X, Comedy. Or follow me on Twitter, Margo with an X. Or on Instagram, Margo. Thanks for listening.